I gave you all the class dates. You have all that. The other pieces for you to set up your calls. Some of you have them set up for this afternoon and tomorrow. That's great. So I'd like you to do one of those coaching calls this week, one the next week, and then you'll do two, and two not on consecutive days, and then that's six altogether. I tend to go late as well, so I would say don't schedule anything right after one of your coaching calls with me, because I'll probably, you know, I just tend to keep people on longer and work with them a bit more. So just want to let you know that's happening. All right. Obviously, there were big changes in the business just in the last few weeks. Dave and I are very accustomed to changing our coaching and our how we train everybody depending on how the business changes. It's just that in this case, it was a very rapid change, but we, you know, knuckled down very quickly and worked hard and turned this around to what, how we can serve students now. And so all of that changed. And where it used to be a nice thing to have a home studio to be able to do that work as well as anything that an agent might book you at a downtown studio, now it's mandatory. And when we audition now, it's no longer just auditioning our read, because we used to be able to do an audition from home and just on your phone was fine for auditions. But instead of it being just our read, now we're also auditioning the sound of our studios. So we are going to help you make sure that your studio sounds like it ought to sound. And it doesn't have to look fancy. We might ask you to send photos of it just so we can see how you have the mic set up and your baffling and anything like that. But it's not about the looks. It's about the sound. So anyway, that is going to happen. And I'm going to bring Dave in a little bit later to talk more about that piece. All right. Now, about our market here, the Twin Cities has been the number four market in the country for voiceover for years. A few years ago, we were kind of neck and neck with Chicago, who was number three, who was number four, and it kind of bounced back and forth, but we settled kind of into number four. But if you think about it, the top markets, New York and LA, obviously way out in the stratosphere, and then Chicago, all of those places have shows in production all the time. TV shows and movies are in production all the time. And so in a city like that, it's pretty much required that you become a union talent. In the Twin Cities, that's not so important, and I'll talk about that more. But for New York, LA, and Chicago, let's say an actor has done very well in whatever city they live in, Kansas City or Minneapolis or wherever, and that's the path they want. That's the career path. They want to be an LA actor. They want to be a Hollywood talent. So you would go to a city like that, let's say New York. You can get a booking as a non-union talent just to earn your union card. You can go get a booking doing what they call an under five. That's how many lines you'd have, under five lines, on a show like Law & Order. Has everybody seen Law & Order?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I know it's pretty formulaic, sort of, kind of. So imagine the opening where you see the couple. It's very formulaic. So there's a couple. They're walking through Central Park. They're talking about their kids. You know, they're walking the dog. Dog gets loose. They run over and they find a body. They call 911. Next thing you know, Mariska Hargitay shows up, right? That's the basic gist of it. And a role like that, if you do under five lines, well, that's a whole conversation for the actors. That's a minute on screen. And for a role like that, you get paid, and I'm not even exaggerating, about $20. You are working the whole day from before sunup to after sundown. You get lunch, but you go after all the unions go, including the electricians. Everybody else goes first. You go, and you get something to eat, and you're working the whole day. But you also earn your union card. And in a city like that, and Chicago as well, and LA as well, you're not considered a professional unless you have that. So that's why an actor does it. They do it for their union card, not for the $20. And then they can come back and audition to be a criminal or a prosecutor or whatever they need on the show. Another example of those under fives would be like when they canvass, when they go around and ask questions in the neighboring apartment buildings, all of that. Well, they can have under five lines in that too. So that's the typical thing. Roles like that exist in Chicago produced shows and LA produced shows. So that's something you want to do if you want to be a union talent and be considered professional in those markets. In this market, you're considered a professional if you are a professional, if you have professional skills, and if your behavior is professional. And that's what, that's a lot of what this class is about. You will be a professional at this. So here, union versus non, well, about 20 years ago, there was a big writer strike, and everything changed for talent, where it used to be kind of twin paths, union versus non, and they really didn't overlap much. After this writer strike, all of this changed. All the contracts were done differently, and now there is overlap. Union talent who once before would have never wanted to do any non-union work, they will now, and they use a process called being FICOR or financial core. This means they're willing to take non-union work even though they did earn their union card somewhere. Okay? And as you can imagine, the union doesn't really like that so much. They don't like union talent taking non-union work. But since the contracts are done very nicely for non-union talent and they pay about the same as a union job for the most of the kinds of things that you can book here, you know, why wouldn't they if they can, and depending on where their career is headed, how they want to do their business. And non-union people generally were kind of against that too, because, oh, great, you know, I get to compete against a guy who was on Chicago Hope for Medica ads, right? I don't begrudge him that. That's me, though. Some people do begrudge the overlap there. I personally don't. I feel like, hey, people have to earn the living that they were trained to do, and that's what they do. You know, that's their work that they do. So I don't have a problem with people being FICOR. And also, I know that the union doesn't even have an office here anymore. They used to have an office locally and do more to keep union jobs here. They don't anymore. The nearest one is Chicago. So union talent, they would have to go in person when it was local and go in and say, you know, I am so-and-so and I declare myself FICOR. And that means at the next big meeting, they get publicly shamed. But meanwhile, producers are going, oh, good, I can use them again. And the rate of pay for most of the kinds of things you can book here, like I said, is equal or very close. The difference being producers aren't paying into union coffers for pensions and medical help and all that kind of stuff. Now, if you're in LA, if you're an LA actor who would choose to be FICOR, well, that's a different story. You know, they're working as a barista or something and they don't work that much as an actor. Yeah, I think then you might resent actors who are FICOR to have no funds go into those coffers for pensions and medical care. By the way, there are some top actors who are FICOR, and they're getting away with it. Excuse me, just one moment. You guys know who the actor John Voight is?
Yeah.
Mission Impossible and The Onion Field, lots of other stuff.
Midnight Cowboy.
Right, and he is FICOR. Quentin Tarantino is FICOR for the Directors Guild. So, for people like that, yeah, you'd probably resent it. Locally, mostly not. Mostly you go, oh, okay, you earned that card, but now you're non-union. By the way, I've always been non-union. I've looked at it over the years thinking, well, should I, you know, jump into that other pool? It's like, well, these copywriters are booking me a lot, so why would I make a switch? I'm going to grab some water here. Any questions so far on all of that stuff about union versus non? Well, the upshot is stay non-union. Stay non-union as long as you can. You may have something come up that you have no choice, and then discuss it with your agent about whether you want to be FICOR or whether you want to be, you know, SAG-AFTRA. So about the contract. So in the 80s, anybody who was a union talent in the 80s, let's say somebody did a McDonald's commercial as a child in the 80s, and that ad is still playing somewhere in the world, maybe local, maybe here, but also maybe in Prague or somewhere in Asia. Well, the contract was written in the 80s, so they're getting whatever, you know, whatever the contract was written for back then, which is a lot, and probably were able to buy their family a house and put themselves through college and graduate school and, you know, buy themselves a house. But their contracts are not like that anymore. Everyone's heard the term residuals, yes? Anybody want to define what that means? Pop quiz. Just kidding. Go ahead, Gerardo.
I don't know. I haven't heard of that. Residual, you said?
Residual. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Yes, go ahead, Gregory.
Residuals is when you get further payments. You continue to receive payment for work that you've already done that's already been recorded for subsequent uses of it.
That's right. That's right.
Like royalty?
Not exactly. No. But there's some overlap there. But yeah, he's got that right. And in non-union work, we do not get residuals by that name. We do have contract renewals. And some people who are against working non-union will say, oh, well, you never want to work non-union, you don't get residuals. We do get contract renewals, though, and also residuals now are not what they were 20-plus years ago. It's changed dramatically over time. So, does anybody know who the actor Kevin Chamberlain is? Does anybody watch or have kids that would watch Jesse on the Disney Channel? Okay, Kevin Chamberlain. He was also in Road to Perdition and Herman USA, which was the movie about Minnesota farmers advertising for wives. Came out about 20 years ago. Not quite. So he was also the original Horton in Seussical on Broadway. He has Tony nominations for that. He has Tony nominations for Dirty Blonde on Broadway, which is about Mae West. He was the original Uncle Fester in the Addams Family musical. Dave and I watched Road to Perdition again a couple of weeks ago, and he's the guy that pats down Tom Hanks and then later gets shot. Ooh, spoiler alert.
I just watched that last night.
Did you?
I did.
Okay, so do you know the scene I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah, that's Kevin Chamberlain. I went to high school with him. We did high school musicals together. I put his crepe hair beard on him for Pippin when he played Charlemagne. Anyway, he went on to be a very successful actor. Not so successful that everybody knows his name, but that's kind of what you want. You want to still be able to grocery shop and just be a normal person, as well as having an acting career. Well, Jesse, this show on Disney... he's Bertram, the butler on that. So if you have little kids in your life, you may have seen that because it's a kids show. Anyway, so he's been a union actor. He's done commercial. You'll see him around the holidays in a Toyota ad. He's wearing a tux and he's singing and the camera pulls back and you see this giant Toyota showroom. You've probably seen these kinds of ads. Anyway, he posted on Facebook not that long ago that he had received 11 residual checks in the mail at once, and he's thinking, wow, this is awesome. I'll buy all my friends' Teslas. You know, amazing. And it amounted to $2.76, all of those residual checks together. Okay, not really even worth the stamps to send them, but they have to send them. That's how their contracts are done now. Miley Flanagan, who is the voice of the English language Naruto, if you know that show, also a character actress. You see her on camera a lot. If you ever watch The Mindy Project, she played the annoying roommate at the spa that Mindy goes off to. If you saw that one, that's Miley Flanagan. She posted getting these residual checks for pennies also. And then all her union friends are, you know, in the comments of her Facebook post, putting in images of their checks for pennies. So that's not good for union talent. It's terrible. What's going to happen with them when they reach retirement age? You know, there's no benefits in their medical care, any of that kind of stuff. That's too bad. I feel bad about that. With non-union work, we don't get residuals, but we do get contract renewals. So that means I did UCARE for like 17 years, 19 years, something like that. And they always did six-month deals. And often they would decide after the 6 months, no, we want to run the same spots for the next 6 months. So I would just get another check for $1,000 and without having to go back in. So I'm just getting another full check, not pennies. You know, it's very worth it. A lot of people call residuals or contract renewals mailbox money. It's like, oh, I guess they re-upped. That's cool. Old Home Dairy was that way. I used to do a lot of old home spots. I had a really great contract, and what happened was the copywriter that I worked with, she lost the gig because the person who was the marketing director at Old Home Dairy was pushed out so that somebody's son-in-law could take over the marketing position. And then, of course, he had to put his own mark on everything. And so it trickled down, and I lost that. But for a couple of years, I was doing old home spots, sour cream, cottage cheese, whatever, you know, several a week. And so I kept this spreadsheet, well, an analog version of an Excel spreadsheet, so that I could remember what the name of the spot was, the date that I did it, the place that I did it, the people I worked with. I had a column for thank you note sent, yes, no. You know, all of that stuff, date paid. And then I could check if I heard the spot. Oh, that was up at 3 a.m. That contract ended last week. I guess they're playing it again. They need to bill me again. I also had a radio job at the time. I was working utility at Cool 108. This was back when all of the elements at radio stations were on floppy disks. A moment in time. I think people, if you watch Frasier, you see the cartridges that look something like an 8-track, but they're not, but they're cartridges. People are aware of cartridge technology. The next thing was floppies. Floppies for a couple of years. Anyway, I would pull them off the rack for my show, and then I go, oh, here's another old home spot. I wonder if this one's me. And I'd play it off air before playing it on air. I was like, oh, that's me too. I would mark it on my spreadsheet, and I would call my agent. At the time, I was repped at NUTS, Non-Union Talent Services. It was owned by Jan Hilton at the time. And I would just call her up and say, this spot is airing again. Please bill for it. Now you'd think, well, if you were union, you shouldn't have to police this yourself. And even if you're non-union, you shouldn't have to police this yourself. And you're right. But anytime you can make contact with your agent, you know, give yourself a reason to call them up and have them remember you more, that's a good thing to do. So I would call her up and she would rebill. I have every reason to think that they're honest and that it was, the paperwork was making its way through and a check would have been coming. But since I could, and I was working there, and I would see it, then I would do that. And there's another talent who was union, FICOR now, Nancy Crocker. She's repped at More Creative, which is where I'm rep now. And she had done something for, oh, like a TGI Fridays or Chi-Chi's or one of those kind of places like that, you know, casual, fast dining, or whatever they call that category. She had done that when she lived in St. Louis, a full spot. She moved here, was talking to her husband with the TV on low in the background, and she heard her voice on the tag to this TV spot. And she went, huh, I guess they repurposed a spot I did. And she had to use the union. They had to fight, get her paid. They're like, oh, we thought we owned it. I'm like, no, you didn't. You never thought you owned it. Because she's union, she would not have that. There wouldn't be that option of a buyout, which we do have in non-union options. But it took a long time, but she did get paid. So whether you're union or whether you're not, you know, that can happen, is my point about that. It's not a question of being able to police it yourself, but if you do know, go for it. Speak up. Get paid. Questions so far?
Hey, Sarah, I think there's a famous story about the woman who voices Siri for Apple.
Yes.
Like, she found out, like, years later, like, you know, like, she had recorded it years before. Yep. And she didn't even know she was going to be Siri, and it just heard her
right.
voice.
Right? Yeah. So, one moment. Yes. So a lot of that category of voiceover work, it's called IVR, interactive voice recording. And Siri's in that category, but so is when, you know, like your bank balance. Your balance is 1,462, you know, any of that kind of stuff. Or you've reached the Peterson Company. For purchasing, press 1. For shipping, press 2. Anything like that is in the same category. Obviously, Siri and Google Voice are much more involved projects. And a lot of that category of work is done in Atlanta. There just happens to be a lot of that work in Atlanta. That's their main type of voiceover work there. And yeah, she worked on that project for Apple for a year before they released the iPhone. And her brother-in-law bought one and called her up and said, gosh, this sure sounds a lot like you. And it was. And so after the fact, Apple had to pay for exclusivity. Prior to that, they kind of weren't. But after that, it's like, well, she's become the default voice for that. No one else would want her because she's just too locked into to them. So anyway, now, so after that, she has started making more money. Yeah, there's a whole article about that. Anybody that wants to friend me on Facebook, I'll add you to the Wild Lines student group on Facebook, which is the School of Voiceover student group. And that's one of the articles that we posted. We posted it quite a while ago, so you'll have to scroll back a bit. But there's a lot of information there. We put that information there before we put it on our website so that our students get any new information faster than anybody else. You also don't have to friend me. You can just go to Wild Lines and request to be added to that. So I just can't add you to it unless you are my friend. So you're welcome to do that. Yeah, so good point about Siri and that category of voiceover work, Nick. All right. I'd like to move on to my next topic, unless there's any other questions or comments so far. Nope. Okay, I emailed you a couple of scripts. Invisalign was one, and New Wonder Smart White, which is the healthy version of Wonder Bread. All right, so let's refer to that Invisalign script. Everybody have it?
Yes.
Okay. What we're going to talk about next is script analysis or spot structure. Why would you want to analyze a script versus just reading it over and getting familiar with it? Any thoughts? I'm such a nerd, and I try to use precise language for what I mean exactly. So why do I say let's analyze it versus, hey, go get familiar with it? Go ahead, Gregory.
Being familiar, just with analyzing, you it goes in with what was in the audio offering in the workshop. Analyzing it gets you in a process, and it helps you break things up and figure out where the switch is with those different parts of, oh, this is the solution, this is the problem, this is where is where you establish connection with the listener.
Right. And establishing the various parts helps you know your goal with each chunk of copy. Right. Anything else to add, anyone? Okay. 4 volunteer voices. I just need you to raise your hand if you're going to volunteer. Okay, Shyla, Nick, Gerardo, you're not on video, so.
Okay, I'll do it.
All right, so we've got Shyla, Nick. Who else will volunteer? I need 2 more.
I can go.
Okay, and who else? 1 more? Gregory. All right. So with this Invisalign script, Shyla, I'm going to have you read first. All right, then Nick, you're going to go second. I'm going to tell you when to pick up from what Shyla read. Okay, so just carry on. Gregory, you'll be third. And Gerardo, you'll be fourth. You're going to have a small part on this one.
Okay.
I do have a question.
Yes.
The watermark obscures some of the text, and I wanted to check on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in the printout, and I looked it up again on the screen.
My version, I can read it fine. But go ahead. Maybe we need to redo how we have that.
the word after braces in the second sentence in the second paragraph, the alternative braces is that's.
Mm-hmm. That's comfortable. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next sentence, straightening your teeth little by little until a new smile emerges, correct?
Actually straighten, not straightening.
Straighten your teeth. Okay. Mm-hmm. The sentence after that, join the millions at Invisalign.com and arrange, what are the next words?
A free, no obligation consultation. Okay. Thank you for telling me that. We'll fix that for any future communiques, okay?
Okay. Thank you. thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, cool.
Could you tell me actually what the next line is after that?
After which part?
After the free no obligation consultation.
With an experienced Invisalign provider, and let the world see the real you.
Okay, see the real you. Great.
Yeah. Thank you for telling me that. When I print it, it looks fantastic. You know, I can see the watermark, but it doesn't obscure. So thanks for letting me know that. We're learning more stuff as we convert everything to online training. There's always little glitches and things to address. So thanks for that. So the rest is good?
Yes.
All right. So I think I said Shyla first, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So I know you're reading completely cold here. And that's sort of the point of it. Except that this is very, very cold. You haven't even looked it over. We're just starting the process here. All right, Shyla. So just begin from the beginning. I'll tell you when to stop. And then I think I said Gregory next, right? Okay. Did I say or Nick? Did I say Nick second?
Yeah, you said Nick second, yeah.
Okay. I'll just say next, as long as you remember your parts. I'll just say next. All right, Shyla, go ahead and start from the top, and I'll tell you when to stop.
Your smile says you're happy, confident. But if you're uncomfortable with your teeth, your smile could be saying just the opposite.
Next.
Fortunately,
there's Invisalign. The clear alternative to braces that's comfortable and removable for eating and brushing. Straighten your teeth a little by little.
Actually, go ahead and read that second sentence, or that last sentence.
Straighten your teeth little by little until a new smile emerges.
Next.
Join the millions at Invisalign.com and arrange for a free, no obligation consultation with an experienced Invisalign provider and let the world see the real you. Invisalign.
Next.
Learn how to smile again.
All right. Good. I like having four voices on there because I like to have four voices to illustrate the various parts. That's why I do it that way. Okay, so let's talk about the goals and why you're doing this. The reason why I have you break down a script with analysis versus just sort of getting comfortable with it is that it's always a cold reading business. When we get back to working in a studio, you'll have about 10 minutes to look over a script. They don't want you there much earlier than 13 minutes or so. You get there early, you do your warm-up in your car, then you go in between 10 and 13 minutes ahead of the session. Then you have time to go to the bathroom and hang your coat up or whatever, and turn your phone off. But really, they want you there about 10 minutes to the session ready to go, and that's when they hand you the script that they just finished writing and got approval on. They're always up to the minute in voiceover, and they don't want you to have the script ahead because they want the spontaneity that they can get from you when they direct you. But you still have to make some quick decisions about it, and that's why it's helpful to know the various parts and what the goals are in there. So the part that Shyla read, your smile says you're happy, confident, this bit right there, that is the setup. I call it the setup. You can go ahead and write that down. That's the setup. From your smile down to just the opposite. So this script happens to be extremely cut and dried to me, what the goals are in there. That's why I use it for an example. Not every script that you get is this clear, but what's happening in the setup is always going to be some kind of a problem or perhaps some kind of a complaint. It's either implied or very explicit. In this case, it's quite explicit. Your smile says you're happy, confident. You're uncomfortable with your teeth. Well, that's terrible. That's sad. That's a complaint. That's a problem. Right? Then the next bit that we had there, which was, who was second? Nick, right? Nick was second. Fortunately, there's Invisalign. He read all the way down to a new smile emerges. This is the body of the script. Go from the setup to the body. The body contains all of the most important information about the product, bar none. We know what it's called and what it does in the body. And it also provides an answer to the complaint or a solution to the problem. So I'll repeat that. The body contains all of the most important information about the product, what it's called, what it does, answers the complaint, provides a solution to the problem. So far, so good?
Yep.
Okay. Then the next chunk in there that Gregory read, join the millions at Invisalign.com, all the way down to just simply Invisalign on the final line of the script. This is the resolve. Some resolves are very simple. Some are very involved. This is a very involved resolve. Invisalign is what, about a 20-year-old brand maybe? Something like that? So it's pretty well established, but maybe not everybody's heard of it. So they want to go on and on and on with their resolve. Join the millions at Invisalign.com, blah, 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 Invisalign. If it were a really established brand, they wouldn't have to say all this stuff about it. All they would have to say is, straighten your teeth little by little until a new smile emerges. Invisalign. And I just kind of threw my arms out like I was conducting an orchestra when I said Invisalign at the end. Because with body language and with intent, just simply Invisalign is enough of a resolve. We get we get the implication that, hey, now you've been reminded what it's called. Now you can go find it. Is that making sense?
Is the resolve always a call to action?
Yes, and that was my next point about that. It's some kind of a call to action. In this case, a very explicit call to action. Call to action. Join the millions. Take this action. Verb this noun. Right? But simply, Invisalign is an implied call to action. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the resolve is some kind of a call to action. In this case, very explicit. All right. And then the part that Gerardo read at the bottom, learn how to smile again. Well, that's the button. The button is optional. Not every script has a button. Purpose of the button is either to be funny, which this one is not, or it bookends with a beginning, which it does. Your smile says you're happy, confident. Learn how to smile again. See how that kind of bookends? Right? Okay, not every script has a button, but we have the setup, the body, the resolve, and the button. All right. Questions about that one? We're going to come back to it, but are there questions before we move on?
Are there any like really famous buttons that like are always in ads that you can think of?
Oh, probably. I'll bet with 15 minutes notice I could think of a bunch. That's a cool idea.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm thinking like, I'm thinking of like mottos or taglines or stuff like that. Like I think in like Men's Warehouse, you'll like the way you look, you know, like, is that a button or is that?
No, that's a tag isn't necessarily the same thing as a button. If it's funny or if it bookends with a beginning, it's a button. Tags are a little bit different. They can be just their slogan. Right? Okay, let's put this one aside. Come and let's look at the New Wonder Smart White, the Healthy Wonder Bread ad here. And I'm going to give you a couple of minutes, and I'd like you to come up with the setup, the body, the resolve, and the button, if there is one. And a big hint on this is sometimes your brain will lie to you, but your body tells the truth. So I encourage you to try it out loud to be sure you have it right. Set up, body, resolve, and is there or isn't there a button? All right, I'm not going anywhere, but I'm going to mute my mic while you guys look at that. Speak up if there's questions, okay? All right, are we close? Everybody thinks they have been able to identify the setup, body, resolve, and the optional button? Yeah? Okay. What do we think is the setup?
The three you wonder part?
Yep, I'd agree with that. Anybody disagree? The first three you wonders? Okay, cool. Yep. And so that means the body starts at you'll always wonder about your kids. Where does the body finish, knowing that the body has to have all of the most important information about the product?
Up to vitamin D.
Vitamin D, yep. Everybody on board with that? Cool. All right, working backwards now, does this one have a button?
Loose wonder white, always wonder.
What's the button, though?
I think it's always wonder.
Yes, I would agree.
I agree.
Why? Because it bookends with the beginning. You wonder, does she still think boys are icky? Always wonder. You can kind of see how that bookends, right? So that means by default, what's the resolve in this one?
New wonder, smart white.
Yep, exactly. Very much an implication of, you know, all of the, go get it. Wonder is about a 100-year-old brand at least, right? Maybe this product is newer, but the brand is not new. So if they just remind you it exists, then, you know, that's kind of enough. They don't have to go on and on and on with their call to action. It's just implied, right? Wonderful. Let's put that one aside and go back to Invisalign. And I will send you a more legible copy of this. But, all right, so going back to this, in those 10 minutes that I have to look over a script, the first thing I do is what I just showed you to do, identify the setup, body, resolve, and is there or isn't there a button, and I mark it. I mark it on the copy. Pros make more marks on their copies than new people do. The mark of a pro is you're not shy about making a mark. Okay. But then I want to do a little bit more. I want to remind myself about some of the things in the structure here and sort of what I want to do. So I draw a little smiley face above the word smile. Your face is your resonant chamber, and the shape of your words is affected by how you change your facial expression. So I want to smile when I say smile, and everybody can hear the smile when I say smile with a smile on my face. So just to remind myself, I draw a little smiley face above the word smile. And then in that same line, uncomfortable with your teeth. Well, I would probably draw a little sad face above the word uncomfortable. I also write in SMH. Does everybody know what SMH means? Shaking my head. But if you're uncomfortable with your teeth, and I'm shaking my head and frowning when I say that, you can hear it. You can have your own kind of shorthand and notes that you do. Everybody comes up with their own. I'm sharing mine because I just want to give you a place to start with, give you some ideas. But your own ideas are great to put into play. I draw little hearts sometimes as well. I have a talent in our advanced class. She likes to write a question above the line that she's answering that question. If I wrote a question, I would feel querying myself. But for her, writing a question means she's answering the question. So you'll come up with all of your own. I'm just sharing with you some of mine. Then we get into, fortunately, there's Invisalign. Well, I like to circle the first time I say the product name. So I remind myself to give myself a little shiny glow on that. Sometimes I draw little sun rays coming off of it. I don't underscore it there because to me an underline sounds different than a circle, but that's just me. Then we get to the clear alternative to braces that's comfortable and removable for eating and brushing. Well, you have two word chunks in a row. Word chunks have to be voiced together or else they really don't make sense. So comfortable and removable is sort of one set of qualities, and eating and brushing is one set of actions. So what I do is I would bracket comfortable and removable and also hyphenate them. And then I also do the same thing with eating and brushing. I bracket them. Eating and brushing is a word chunk, and hyphenate them. The clear alternative to braces that's comfortable and removable for eating and brushing. And I might get that intellectually and think, I don't need to mark that. I get it. I understand. But then I get up on mic and there's people looking at me, or if I'm on Source Connect, they're listening to me and I want to make sure that I get it right. And if I don't mark it, I might make a mistake and say the clear alternative to braces that's comfortable and removable for eating and brushing. And that sounds stupid. In some sentence structures, the word and is where you might take a breath right before it, but not in this case. So that's why I want to mark it clearly that it's, you know, one chunk. Making sense so far, you guys?
Yes. Good?
Okay. Straighten your teeth little by little. Well, I would hyphenate little by little. I wouldn't bracket it because to me it's less of a word chunk than the previous two that I mentioned. But that's me. Till a new smile emerges, join the millions at Invisalign.com. Well, I might underscore Invisalign.com. I have my own. Sometimes I draw a little cloud around the product name. Sometimes I do a double underscore. Sometimes I do a squiggly underscore. Sometimes I circle it. Sometimes I draw hearts. I have a lot of different ways I do it, and you'll come up with your own. And then I'm going to smile at the end. I draw another little smiley face at the end. Sometimes you have really long sentences and you need to remind yourself where you want to grab your breaths. If you get a script that is a mix of short and long sentences, that's just a gift. Sometimes if they write them, they're all the same sentence length. You can be sucked into a rhythm that sounds very fake and you have to kind of fight it as you go along. But if they give you a script that it's a variety of sentence lengths, that's fantastic. But if one of those sentences happens to be really long, well, then you might mark where to grab a breath, where you might need to catch breath, because it's not going to be just where you ran out of breath. It's going to be between clauses, natural places. Sometimes that's before an and, sometimes it's before a verb, that kind of thing. And my mark to remind myself where to grab a catch breath is a double hash mark. Sometimes people write in a big B right there, but whatever works for you is very helpful. And it's nice to do all that in pencil so that any other directions that they give you, you can write in ink as they give them to you. And that's helpful, too, to have different colors of ink sometimes, a highlighter, that kind of thing. When we do your coaching calls, this is what I'd like you to do with your scripts. Analyze them like this. They will not be all so cut and dried. You might even have a script that is nothing but setup because maybe there's a secondary voice that gives the body and resolve. And you're nothing but setup, but there are still transitions within there. Good so far. All right. Also want to say, I mean, I know a lot of you are in the education field and you might be all fine with this, but I've had students who hate my terminology, setup, body, resolve, and button. They just feel like, ugh, I'm in seventh grade language arts all over again, and I hated seventh grade language arts. So if that's you, don't worry about it. That's fine. You don't have to use that terminology. You do have to be able to find the transitions and understand what the goals are in each chunk, but you don't have to call it that. Of all those terms, the only one that a copywriter would expect you to know is button. The rest of it, they don't think you know. They would just say, let's go down to the third line and take that again, you know. So if you don't like my terminology, that is fine. You can call it 1, 2, 3, ta-da. Or you could call it beginning, middle, end, jazz hands. You know, whatever you want to do is fine. But if you like my terminology, then go with that. I had a student a couple of years ago, and she could really analyze a script like nobody's business, but setup, body, resolve, and button were not her jam. She hated it and resented it and got nervous and tense with the idea of it. So that part doesn't matter as long as you can dissect it and identify the parts. Good?
Right. Yep.
All right, cool. Stand by one moment. All right, shortly I'm going to bring in Dave Larson, who is our other founder of our school here. And you'll be working with him some too. Next week's class will be taught by him. But I wanted to bring him in just to talk about some home studio stuff. Your first calls that you do this week, if you're not completely on board with your with all of that stuff, that's fine. You can certainly record yourself on your phone for your homework, the homework piece. And just me recording, or I can do your coaching by Zoom again, so you'll have at least a reference of that. But soon we would like you to have that so that your recordings are clean. So Dave is here. I'm going to bring him in just to talk a little about home studio stuff, and he can answer questions for you as well. Hello, Dave.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right. There's got to be something more exciting than looking at a whole bunch of talking heads. Anybody want to do a handstand or something? Some kind of indication.
Well, I don't know. We got a clown.
I like Emmanuel
right
there because he's got that darkness with the glow in the back, so you can kind of move in and move out. Of course,
Gregory's a juggler. He could probably. You got nothing to juggle. And he's a clown. I'm assuming he can juggle.
So there's a lot of stuff you can say about home studio. It's a course all to itself. I want to make one simple point. I'm going to kind of dive in and give you something real hyper detailed, but brief, and then explain why it's worth knowing this. The way I like to say it is, let's say, if you think that working from some location would be bad because there's occasional, you know, road noise or airplane noise or cats or dogs are barking and you think, oh, I've got a terrible studio. Realize that some of the most expensive studios in the world still have jackhammers for construction in the building and things like that. Studio owners often have to be able to negotiate with unions and construction companies in order to do their business. So the reality of the world of having a studio means that you have to figure out how to deal with a sound that doesn't work. So if you had road noise, my example would be from most expensive to least expensive, how could you dampen road noise? Well, you could put a tunnel over the freeway. Okay, that would be most expensive. Obviously, that would be ridiculous, right? You could put an igloo of foam over your house. Okay, that's a little less ridiculous. Now, why am I being so crazy? Well, the third thing you could do is you could line a whole room with acoustic dampening foam. Well, what's the fourth thing? The fourth thing would be you could simply line foam around your microphone and talk into that. So the question that should occur to you is, if I could just like put my microphone in the bottom of a bowl of foam and talk into that, what would I need a studio for? Why would I need to put any foam on the walls? Well, the reason that it's not ridiculous to put foam on the walls, even though the other things are ridiculous, is because the closer the foam gets to the microphone, the more the trade-offs become. If you actually have, just picture, a bowl, a deep bowl, and your microphone is laying in the bottom of it, you're going to get a little bit of a pillow effect. You're going to sound a little bit muffled talking into this bowl of foam. Also, if you have a bowl and you're getting your voice right on it, the microphone is going to pick up more sounds from you because it's going to be concentrated by that bowl. That means essentially you're going to get more mouth noise. Excuse me. So my tip is to take like two chopsticks, tape them together in an X, and wrap some fabric around them so it's as if you have the size of a, you know, a paperback, a small paperback of fabric, about that size. And then poke a hole in the middle so you can put some string or a twist tie or a piece of wire or a rubber band around the middle of that X, and then attach that little book of fabric behind your microphone. So that's incredibly detailed, and you might want to say, can you give me some plans, and so on and so forth. But I want to point that out because putting a little bit of dampening material, even if it's just some fabric you've cut from a blanket or something, right behind your microphone, doesn't have any trade-offs as long as it doesn't block your view of anything. And it does block some of your voice going out to echo in the room, and it does block some of the sounds, air conditioning, traffic, dogs, or the echo of your voice coming back to the mic. So that's one place that for a few pennies and a few minutes of your time, you may be able to save yourself dozens or hundreds of dollars in your studio setup. I just want to point that out because that is the key best practice to saving money on a home studio, is putting a little bit of fabric right behind the microphone. Any questions on that? And there can be a lot of questions, but I just want to get that into your head above everything else. Any questions?
Would putting like maybe like some egg crate foam on like a trifold and putting that behind the mic, would that help dampen some ambient noises?
One of the things you can do with egg crate foam, which is really not very good acoustically, but it's not terrible, is to actually take a coat hanger and just kind of take a piece of wire, you know, make a piece of wire from it by cutting it, sharpen one end, and then poke it into that foam so that you can actually bend that foam by bending the wire. That's a real handy way to take acoustic foam or any kind of foam and mount it somewhere. So if you do have some egg crate foam, that would be a thing you could do. If you're going to literally use foam from an egg crate, I would at least double it up and definitely have the pointy parts pointed at your voice. It's important. The analogy I give is imagine a giant wave hitting a beach, and if it's a long, flat beach, that water just spreads out and flattens out and just runs for 100 yards if you've got a long, flat beach. But we've all seen a picture of erosion control where they dropped giant, sharp rocks right along the shore, and these giant waves come in and they just crash and they just dissolve to foam when they hit those rocks. That's what acoustic energy does to dampen it. It needs a maze of rocks, essentially a box of rocks. The surface of the box should be sharp and have angles, and that's why all the acoustic foam you've seen has those angles. It looks like egg crate foam to a certain degree. That's the first level of giving the sound somewhere to bounce around and die. And then within the foam, it's like a maze of taller, smaller rocks, you know, a maze that the sound can bounce around in. So an easy way to come up with a great acoustic dampening material is to buy shredded fabric from Goodwill and put it in chicken wire. Right?
Cool.
It doesn't look good. You know, I mean, suppose you could spray paint it and, you know, and pin butterflies to it or something. But just so I'm trying to give you some analogies and some understanding of what actually causes acoustic dampening.
So let me, can I ask you this?
Please do.
I have a vision now that you have your, you have a pop screen in front of the mic.
Correct.
And now you're talking about a sound dampener behind the mic.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the mic is literally in a sandwich. In the front, there's something that dampens the air. So, you know, you if you've ever seen a microphone's on location, it looks like they've taken the fuzziest fabric in the world and wrapped it around a microphone, this huge, thick, fuzzy shag, because that quiets the wind when you're outside without cutting down the sound. Mm-hmm. A pop screen and some other things in front of the mic, pop screen is the most well-known, helps deflect or block, you know, the air from you blowing. So if I move around my pop screens here, I've got two of them. You know, I had to move my two pop devices away so you could hear the wind from my voice. Anyway, it's a little more information than you asked for, but does that answer your question?
Yes.
The next most important thing to realize is that the human voice covers a very small frequency range as far as what is technology capable of capturing well. If you have a very low-pitched voice, you will start to get into the range of it's a little harder for the technology to capture that perfectly. But you'd have to have a speaking voice. You'd have to have a ridiculously high-pitched speaking voice. A singer, you know, would fit the idea of high pitch, but not a speaker. We don't speak at a high enough pitch where it starts to become a challenge for technology. So why do I point that out? Because microphones, condenser microphones, microphones that are designed to capture the human voice well, all do a great job. Now, there are varieties, but if you get a large diaphragm condenser mic, that just means the device inside the microphone, the diaphragm, it's just a little circle of material that vibrates. If it's an inch or larger, and it is literally a condenser microphone, you wouldn't have the diaphragm like that if it wasn't, then you're going to have a decent mic. If it's something that's incredibly low power, in other words, not sensitive at all, you get these with like $20 Chinese knockoff microphones of AT2020, AT2020 being a very popular voiceover mic. They're not very sensitive. So as long as the condenser microphone needs power, needs a reasonable amount of power, and that capsule is an inch or larger, you're not going to be able to tell the difference between a lot of mics. Now, that seems like an extreme statement, but I've got some online audio that we'll share with you later with a $3,600 Neumann. And this is literally a $3,600 mic. You cannot buy it for less compared to a mic that's price varies between $70 and $110. And you can listen to the voice talent, who's also a studio engineer, reading the same words in both mics. And if you switch back and forth between them or have somebody do it and close your eyes, you can't tell the difference. And it's not because this $70, well, I'll just call it $100 mic for convenience, is a miracle. It's because all it's trying to do is record human voice. Human voice does not require a lot of, you know, 2020 modern technology to capture well. The phone microphone in a smartphone is really good, for example. It's designed to capture sound in all directions, though, and it doesn't have a pop filter in front of it. But I have tried putting a smartphone in the bottom of a bowl of fabric, putting a pop filter over it, and recording and comparing it to a studio microphone, and it's a really terrific mic. So that there are electronic measurements, and I'll just leave it at electronic measurements that can tell you the difference between different microphones doesn't mean and the fact that there's 10,000 articles on which microphone to buy really doesn't mean that it's that complicated a decision. There's a minimum standard that 1-inch or larger capsule inside. And we've got an article on that, and we actually have equipment for anybody who wants it. You can just come get it from us. We buy a lot of the stuff in advance, pop filters, et cetera, you know, to make it easy for you. Any questions about that? Again, there's a lot of stuff that could be said there. And according to what I've read, if I don't create an uncomfortable silence, I'm not doing a good job.
Well, I think Emmanuel may have been trying to speak. Emmanuel, raise your hand if you were just trying to speak and we just weren't hearing you because the internet connection isn't great.
No.
Oh, there you
go.
No worries.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I heard someone and I thought it was you. I can give you the recording of this class, by the way, just so you can review it for your reference. And also, if you missed any parts.
Yep, it'll go online.
So far, so good.
So there's obviously a lot more that could be said, but understanding the microphone side is crucial. We'll get you some samples so you can listen to them, prove for yourself some of the most popular microphones for voiceover compared to this less expensive microphone. And we don't buy and resell exactly. We've done that a little bit lately because we had to get everybody converted to home studios, and we had a bunch of people who didn't have home studios when stay-at-home orders started to go out. That's the only reason that we sort of got in the business. But our goal is not to try to sell it for a nickel more. Our goal is just to make sure you guys get something that works and don't, you know, pay too much. The last thing, third thing out of three that I'm going to say, that egg crate foam. Picture that again, peaks and valleys. If you've looked at acoustic foam, you'll see it in egg crate style, or it'll look like, you know, the corrugated side of a shed, corrugated metal, you know, kind of the sharper though, V points and V valleys. Instead of those many, many points, there's ridges. What that is basically a smaller version of the corner of a room. So the perfect place to set up a studio is either a clothes closet where all the hanging clothes make this great place for sound to bounce around and lose its acoustic energy. Hanging clothes, there's nothing better. A famous guy who's great at marketing, he's a decent talent and a decent coach. He's not a great talent and he's not a great coach, but he's great at marketing. You may have heard of him, Bill DeWeese in Chicago. When he got into voiceover initially, he worked out of his clothes closet. And he did that for 2 years. He worked every day. He worked, you know, every day more and more hours. And he didn't get out of his clothes closet until he bought himself a whisper room for, I don't know, $25,000 at the time, something like that. In other words, he couldn't do better than his clothes closet without spending $25,000. He didn't want to get out of that clothes closet because it's a fantastic space. If you go to a university quiet room, it looks a lot like they've hung black clothes a few inches apart on the wall all over the place. So clothes closet is great, provided, you know, you set up reasonably well. But the other great place is to put some dampening material on the wall in a corner and stand with your back to the corner. The reason for that is, and you can easily test this, is that the microphone pointed at your face when you're standing with your back to the corner, that microphone is going to be pointed into the corner. Back of your head points into the corner, microphone points into the corner. I'm just stating the obvious here, helping you visualize it. The microphone seems like you would want to put it in the corner, right, and talk into that corner because your voice is going to go into that corner and the sound of your voice is going to die in that acoustic corner. Well, that's true, but think about where the microphone is pointed. It's pointed into the room. So whatever sounds are in the room, the microphone is going to pick those up. Now, your voice will echo not much, right, if you're pointed into the corner. So the echoes of your voice in the room will be less. But turn around, and now the microphone is pointed into that dead space. So a corner is a great place to set up a studio. And the nice thing about that, if you're short on space, is that you can take, you know, couch cushions and other things that can make acoustic dampening material and put that on the walls in the corner, and anything else, such as your mic stand and your copy, you can move that. You know, you can put it away or not. If you take, whether it be shredded fabric wrapped in chicken wire, or you take something that we've got that's a lot easier and cheaper to work with, and you wrap it in, you know, pretty fabric, the corner won't look too bad either, because you can just cover what's on the walls essentially with some fabric. So if you don't have a closed closet, or you don't want to set up in a closed closet, the corner of a room works great. But you got to stand in that corner, point your back to the corner so that the microphone is pointed into that dead space. So those are the three most important things to understand about a home studio. Any questions? And we'll get you more info on that, of course. Uncomfortable silence. Okay.
No question.
All right.
Sarah.
Well, good. All right. Thanks so much, Dave. You guys will all have the chance to work with Dave a bit next week as well. But you may go.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
You're dismissed. All right, everybody. Okay. I sent you your first handout last night. The longest of the handouts. A lot of your homework is mentioned in there, so please do that. I've also sending you another homework assignment that'll come by email today. If you had the chance to read the handout I sent last night, any questions on it? And we can talk about that more next week too. So
PDF file?
I think so, yeah. And it's about an 8-page handout.
Yeah, okay.
And it's okay if you haven't read it yet. Usually I have people read that by the second week so that we can answer any questions there. But I just thought, hey, got it last night. Probably had nothing else to do. So you read it as bedtime reading, I'm sure. All right, cool. We'll just get on that next week. Now, for your calls, I see that Nick and Sabrina have both set up calls for tomorrow. And I don't know if anybody else has set up calls yet, but I had a cancellation. They came in about 15 minutes ago. Somebody canceled a call that was supposed to start at 1:30. Does anybody want that slot today? Gerardo, you want it?
Yeah, I think I could do that since cool. I won't be able to do it tomorrow.
Oh, you have a week to do it. But if you'd like this afternoon, I mean, I'd love to fill that spot with one of you guys. So you got it. I'll just change that to you. And I'll be calling you at 1:30. While Dave was on with you, I emailed you guys all a big PDF of about, I think it's about 20 scripts. And I would like you to just pick something from that and prepare for it with your marks and all that kind of stuff that I showed you in script analysis for when you do your call. Be ready for that, and I call you pretty much right on time, unless I can't. In that case, I would text you to say if I'm running late. But anything else for today? Otherwise, we can be adjourned, but I just want to give you time to ask any more questions.
Sir. I talked with Dave earlier in the week. Maybe I should have asked when he was on, but you know, he mentioned you guys had microphones and that kind of stuff that we could purchase from you. Do you know, is that stuff ready to go, and how would we facilitate getting that from you guys?
Well, we would have you come over and get it off the picnic table outside our apartment. I would send you an invoice to just pay for it. I think we do have some still ready to go. Let me just shout to the other room so he knows that question came in.
Could it be shipped to Ashland, Wisconsin?
I think she went over to talk to Dave.
Yeah.
Yes, we do have mics available right away. So to Wisconsin, Steve?
Yes.
Probably would want you to come get it from us, or we would tell you how we sourced it so you can get your own and have it shipped to you. Yeah. How far away are you?
Over 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, that's too long.
Three and a half. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not in the neighborhood. Let's put that. I'm on Lake Superior. Right.
Okay. Yeah, we don't want to. We don't want to go to the post office. We're maintaining our social distancing. Ah, Dave is returning. I'm
totally with you on that one. So yeah. I'll just get it off of Amazon or something or eBay, but
have it shipped. I've seen them as low as 59 and as much as 120. So
yeah. Okay.
So I'll get you some links.
Excellent. That'd be great. Dave.
I know I should have introduced myself. I'm back. Okay. So.
Well, there's an obvious distinction between you and Sarah. So.
Okay. Well, good hearing is an important part of being a voice talent.
I might be screwed.
I'll make a couple comments about equipment. I'll be brief. You already know I'm lying, having heard me talk. You want to plug everything in into the same outlet, ideally into the same power strip. That means that the box that powers your microphone and the box that powers your computer. Now, the box that powers your computer is inside your computer, so really I'm just saying the power cable. But your microphone, condenser microphone, needs a power box. Often that's a mixer. A lot of people will buy a mixer with knobs on it. You don't need to have a mixer with knobs. All you need is a box that will power your microphone. I'll get some info on that. So it's great to have a power strip. If you don't have a power strip, can't dig one up, can't borrow one, you might want to buy one. That will save you headaches. Another point, I know this is, you can hear this is some hard won experience on my part. Get a piece of colored paper and write NO with two exclamation points on it and tape it to the back of your microphone. Why is that? Well, there's a front and a back to your microphone, and microphones are proximity and directional sensitive. In other words, you'll sound real different if you're talking into the back. And there's almost no markings on the microphone to show you. There is a marking on every microphone. It's usually a little tiny pattern diagram. It's the size of a large pinhead. Your cable for your microphone, we'll give you a link. We suggest a four-conductor cable. The reason is that does a much better job of stopping any power interference. Otherwise, you have to be careful, for example, that if your cable lays on the floor, the microphone cable, that it crosses any power cables at a right angle. And you're already thinking, this is more than I want to know, right? And that's why a four-conductor cable is handy. They're not that expensive, really. And you can just plug them in and forget it. So you'll need a power box for your microphone. And we'll get some links up for everybody. Some of it's already online, but I'm actually updating it right now. That's my version of brief. Okay. Does that help? Any questions?
I do have a quick question. I didn't have a chance to read the studio information that was sent to me. So for the microphone that you have or that you're talking about, is it the AT2020?
No.
Okay.
The AT2020 does not pick up your resonance enough. I'll give you an example. I'll back up from this microphone and then I'll get in close. And that way I won't have to demonstrate by faking my voice. But here I am talking farther away from the microphone. You hear that? You can hear a little pressure in my voice, right? Because I'm actually sounding a little louder. So I've actually changed my voice. Now I'm going to get very close. No, I'm just relaxed. I'm talking. Obviously, my voice is deep. You hear a little bit of glottalization. You hear that sound in my voice. It's not that sound. It's just that close-up warmth. The AT2020 is going to make you sound more like this. So if you're doing animation, if you're use the back of your throat, the pharynx, and you do that kind of, I'd like to talk to you about some important things, if you've got that kind of a voice. Okay, kind of sounds like you're barking a little bit. Or if you're looking for a very clean, neutral sound, hey, let's all talk about the things that we want to talk about. Those are two voice types that the AT2020 will work with. But it's not sensitive enough, generally speaking, as a voiceover mic. But it's not bad either. So
what is
it costs the mic more than it should.
What is the mic that you suggest?
MXL 2006. Anybody? When did they come out with it? Anybody?
2006.
Okay. Yeah. Right, now you got to give somebody else a chance for the next question. Okay, if it's not the MXL 2006, get the MXL 2008. Somebody else, when did they come out with it? Anybody?
2020.
Yeah, they're very creative at naming microphones. Those are two microphones.
That's exactly like COVID-19. Came out in 19.
Okay, so anybody else with ADHD want to really change the topic there? Squirrel!
Okay. Let's go ride bikes.
I have an MXL 770 on order.
There's two kinds of 770s. I'm not sure why. Maybe one is old and one is new. And Sarah mentioned that. Did you check the capsule size?
I sent her the specs.
By email?
Yeah, I sent her the specs by email because I got it from Amazon. It was.
What are the first two digits of your email address? Characters?
M-A.
M-A. I need a couple more because I got other people with very similar. Marie. Emails.
Type in Marie.
Are you the Music 21 person?
Yep. Because it was in my price range and it was in the MXL. It seems like I couldn't go wrong with an MXL.
I'm looking here. Specs. Doesn't say there. There's no information on the capsule.
Because it looks like it's a sizable mic. Like it looks like it's more than an inch in diameter.
Well, it's the inside capsule, which can be, 7/8 of an inch, and you wouldn't really be able to tell. Where did you get it from?
Amazon. Because it came with, it has the boom arm, it has the pop filter, shock mount, came with cables, and then I got a phantom box separate.
Yeah, a lot of them will make a big deal out of the shock mount, but there's pretty much no microphone in the world that doesn't actually come with one.
Yeah, but I mean, I like
capsule size.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's too small.
Crap. So should I return it? And
you should.
Shipped yet?
You should. I'm looking at the MXL 770 on Amazon. I purchased one time to test it about a year and a half ago, something like that.
Okay.
And. You know,
not good.
It's considering you pay a few more bucks, you know, you don't have to pay twice the amount. It's worth getting one that's got the large diaphragm capsule.
Well, it hasn't shipped yet because I got an email this morning. So,
yeah, we've where are you located in the world?
St. Louis Park. I'm near Yum.
Oh my gosh. All right, I'm just going to start walking, and I'll just run into you. Yeah, I've got one here. I'm
going to
walk
Starbucks
for like 2 hours, and then I'll run into you somewhere. We're in St. Louis Park, for anybody who didn't realize that.
Well, by the roller gardens.
Yeah, just come pick it up. Let's just work that out.
Yeah, let email.
Yeah, I think we picked it up for, I don't know, 85 or something. I'll check, but anyway. It was cheap. It was well under 100, so.
Okay.
You're in good shape. Actually, let me.
So should I just email or should I just cancel the Amazon order and still have them send me the Phantom box?
What Phantom box are you getting?
Let me grab you. Sorry, guys.
let's do this separately. That's a good point.
Please, I don't want to waste everybody's time.
Yeah, because we can solve this, you know, in the next minutes without doing it right now. All right. Yep. Anybody else? Now everybody's afraid to talk.
Well, do you guys have foam too? I went to Home Depot yesterday and they don't have any foam. The only way is to get it online.
If you want to, we do. We built a bunch to create our own studio originally, and I made wood frames, and then later I figured out a better way, and I felt like a dummy for making wood frames, really a hassle. What we do is we get a giant cardboard deep dish pizza box. and we lay wall insulation in it and we wrap it with fabric. The reason is some wall insulation, think of fiberglass, but it's not actually fiberglass, it's mineral wool, safer for your health, is sound absorbent. And, you know, they measure it according to the same kind of specs that acoustic foam is measured by. So you can do an apples to apples comparison. So we have somebody that just wraps them up in boxes for us. It takes longer than it sounds like. But if you wanted to do it yourself, best price in the Twin Cities is at Lowe's for that kind of material. We get essentially, I don't want to overstate the case, but we get two home studios out of one package. Now you may want more than what I'm calling a home studio. So, but if you get a package, you're going to pay more than you absolutely need to, and you'll have a little bit of a hassle putting it all together. But I certainly encourage do it yourself. We don't do it to make money. We just do it so nobody overpays.
Well, and if Gerardo makes them, you could maybe sell them. Maybe somebody else would want the other.
Yeah, if you wanted to buy a big package of it.
Yeah, that's what I was looking into, because they don't have it in stock, not anymore.
Well, Home Depot has will sell it to you by the pallet, but believe it or not, the per each price by a pallet is actually more expensive per each on a pallet than it is at Lowe's. Lowe's is actually cheaper per each than buying them by the pallet at Home Depot.
We'll check out Lowe's.
Yeah, and last time I checked, most of the Lowe's had it in stock. There's four companies that make it. The one that they stock is from a company. It's kind of like a company that sells you a stone wall, and the company's called Stone Incorporated. This company actually named themselves after the material. The material is Rockwool, and the company managed to change their name to Rockwool. So the company's name is actually Rockwool, but the brand name, the product name, is Safe and Sound. But they don't spell the A-N-D. They just make it N, so it's Safe and Sound. That's the product. They cut it into two different sizes inside, but they give you the same amount of material. So when you look, oh, should I get the one that's this way cut or that way cut? Just get the cheaper one. Believe it or not, the cheaper cut is actually easier for home studio.
All right. Multi-purpose foam would do the trick too, would it?
Well, if you've got NRC numbers that you believe on it, acoustic measurements, then yeah. But if you don't, then no. Yeah, a lot of stuff is not good acoustically. Just regular foam, not so great. The kind of what in your mind seems like wadded cotton, the kind of fabric that's inside a couch cushion. When it's not foam, but it's that kind of, you know, looks like a lot of wadded cotton. That stuff's pretty great. That'll kill sound. And if something's fairly thick, that's better.
There's a YouTube video where a gentleman did all these tests, and the best material was bath towels.
Yeah. Yeah. The little fingers on bath towels, which we think of helping wick away moisture, also act like that surface of the, shoreline that has the erosion control rocks. So the surface of a towel is fantastic. But shredded fabric stuck together in chicken wire works very similar to towels. And we've got that acoustic towel information linked to that video he's got on our site. But yeah. Okay, so at this rate, we should be done by midnight.
Well, I think that's – thank you, Dave. I think we can – I want to just wrap up, but I think we're good.
I want to make sure I don't want to discourage questions and say anybody talked too long. We want to help. This is a starter for I Know You Guys, so we want to get you off right.
Thank you.
All right. Cool. And then, Christina, we get this email or something. All right. So just back to your homework and calls. Got Gerardo on at 1:30. I have other openings after 3:30. And when you go to make your appointments, it won't let you make a same-day appointment. But if you ever realize, oh, I was supposed to do another call this week and you didn't, email me and see if there's an opening. Because sometimes, I mean, I show openings, but you can't see them through that link. So you can always get in touch, text me or email me or something. But anyway, there's more. I have like two more openings this afternoon. Is there anybody who would want to grab one who hasn't set one up? All right. I guess I'm going to be watching Ozark then this afternoon or something. Oh, it's so grisly. Anyway, cool. Well, I will look forward to your calls this week and read your handout, do your homework. You'll have audio to send me for this first homework assignment. You do not have to have your home studio all set to go. You can do this homework on your phone until that's all ready to go. But other than that, we can be adjourned unless there's any last questions or comments.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Excited to work with you guys. All right. Well, I am going to click end meeting then. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you soon. All righty. Take care. Bye-bye. Right. Yeah.